And now on Deddington Discussions, Hilary Smith talks to Hugh O'Donnell.
Welcome to Deddington Discussions. I'm Hilary Smith, and today I'm talking to someone who, during his career, has touched the lives of many families and generations in our village. I am, of course, referring to Dr. Hugh O'Donnell. Welcome, Hugh.
Thank you.
And thank you for agreeing to talk to us.
Great pleasure.
Let me start by taking you back to your early life. What were the influences that led you into a career in medicine?
I came from a medical household, one of a large family from southwest London. And there were six boys and two girls, and a busy general practitioner father who'd had a war. He was a pathologist but refused to go back to pathology. He said he'd seen enough dead. And he was an amusing, tactless, funny Irishman, married to my very fine but stern mother. She had to be with eight of us. And I decided at a very early age this is what I wanted to do. I wanted to become a general practitioner, but not in... I didn't want to grow up in what was increasingly a voracious, self-determining suburban London, and I wanted to get out to the country, which is what I did after five or six years in hospital, after qualifying. I then came to the practice here in 1972. But my whole conscious lifespan from, I suppose, the age of five, that would have been at the beginning of the health service.
Yes.
So, in fact, my life has been spent in three tranches of 20 years. The 48 to 68, growing up and qualifying.
And that was in London?
That was in London. Mm. I was at St Mary's Paddington.
Uh-huh.
And then 68 to 88, if you like, the health service altering from the dynamics of my childhood when a significant minority were single-handed practitioners.
Yes.
In loose on-call arrangements.
Yes.
To the massive development of group practices in the late 60s, early 70s. And today, it's a different concept in the sense of much larger practices with more doctors, but less accent on what I grew up with, which is family medicine.
Yes.
But in the same way, what we were able to do what my father was able to do in my childhood, and the powers of therapeutics and surgery were really not that good when you look at today. And that middle 20 years until the late 80s, early 90s, and the early 90s to where we are today in 2012 is another stunning leap forward.
Yes.
With amazing technology. Yes. And for my money, a much higher quality of medicine than I was always dreamed of being able to use. But if we just look at the MRI scans, antenatal work, prenatal work, if you look at the care of coronaries, and one in four coronaries died straight away.
Yeah.
The figure is now in single figures of a percentage.
Yeah.
Stents, coronary bypasses, brilliant orthopedic surgery. The bath chair has made its exit.
Yes.
And it's just a different conceptual thing. No, never mind the politics of it. I don't want to go there because that could take several weeks on its own.
Would never be resolved.
Yeah. So that's really what happened. And then I came here in the early days of 72 to join a three-man practice in eight or nine branch surgeries, which were either the local village hall or somebody's drawing room, or in one occasion somebody's proper office, study in their large house. But these were different days. We were always dispensing, but we used to deliver the drugs to the local post office, the medication, the prescriptions. where they were collected or delivered indeed by the postman or the postmistress in those different days.
So everybody got involved?
Everybody was involved. And yes. we covered 300 square miles around here. It wasn't just Dillington.
That is extraordinary.
Down to the Oxford, the Kidlington border, to the Banbury border, to the Brackley and Bicester borders, and of course to Chipping Norton and Woodstock.
That couldn't be further from the picture you were telling me about of the early days of your father's practice.
That's absolutely right.
Which was based in your own home.
Yeah, based in my own home, yes. The dining room was the waiting room. It was a big house that was built for a doctor in 1828, which had a huge downstairs, a huge cellar. But I won't go into
that. That wasn't for the...
That was for the surgery.
That was for the surgery.
It was
okay.
For the surgery. His mat med, it used to be called Materia Medica, his dispenser would make up the medicines in the base.
I see.
That was the idea before. Well, I suppose when the Napoleonic Wars had finished and this house was built, before Victoria, William IV probably, it was just a different concept.
Yes.
But the house was built for the doctor. And in fact, when my father left it, when he sold it, it was demolished. So it was never anything else than a doctor's
just
house.
Just a doctor's house.
Between 1820-something and whenever it was, perhaps 1975, when they moved out.
But your memories of your father, as you said, were as a family doctor. He'd given up pathology. So
yeah,
he had a good war.
What did you do as a child?
We helped with the filing. We answered the phone. We knew some of the anecdotal stories and...
Oh, that's very important.
...would be amused. The famous Mrs. O'Reilly, who rang my father up one day to say that she'd finally found a doctor who agreed with her diagnosis... And she was therefore thanking him very much, but she was leaving his list. Within 3 months, she was begging to come back on the list because she found the doctor didn't agree with her. Such things.
I'm sure your father felt that was the high point of his career.
He was very amused because he had no harm, he had no malice in him.
Yes.
He loved all humanity, as I've tried to. It's just really splendid to be able to do it.
Mm. Just while we're talking about that, what were the kinds of diseases and problems in the London area post-war?
Well, pre-smog.
Pre-smog.
Chest disease. I mean, I can remember walking in the smog to guide my father's car.
Wow.
It was only half a mile, but I was in a sou'wester with his headlights on me while I walked in on the edge of the pavement.
Yeah.
Because the fog was so... He couldn't see.
And he was trying to get to a patient.
Yes, and he got to the patient, and the patient was very ill, but the patient was in hospital very quickly because he'd ordered the ambulance at the same time as he left.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole procedure took several hours because the pea soupers of the early 50s were just unbelievable.
Mm. Yes.
So the Clean Air Act helped enormously. And then, of course, the pre-diagnosis of malignant disease was so difficult.
Yeah.
And you had these heroic surgeons who did heroic surgery simply because the disorders didn't present. There was no surgery available to help.
Yeah.
And we look today at, perhaps we'll come on to that, but certainly the preeminent thing was arterial disease and chest disease.
Okay, yeah.
It's now highly refined in the generation today who have massive non-intervention with MRI scans, with wonderful radiology, I suppose the stereoscopic surgery, when the endoscope is, you operate under a microscope in the dark.
Yes.
And the patient gets back to their desk or their work or their home within 48 or 72 hours instead of 48 or 72 days. Coronaries had got out of bed on day one. When I was training, they were in bed for 6 weeks.
Amazing.
And that, so there's been a fundamental shift, an enormous shift. And I think today's generation are historically the best doctors ever. Mm.
What would a doctor need today going into the profession?
I don't know, is the answer to that. I think a willingness to do the job is the first thing. And a need to want to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
But the psychology of wanting to do medicine has always been something that's puzzled me. But, you know,
perhaps it's good it remains a puzzle.
Perhaps
it's
good.
Have an answer.
Enigmatic, I think, would cover that.
Yes, yes, indeed. So you came here following, going back to where we were, the sort of 300 square miles of practice.
Yeah, huge area, but very little population. In those days, there was about 8,500, as I recall, from the official figures.
And what sort of work, mostly, would those people have been doing?
Well, they were largely, because we had a car industry then, and we had large industry in Banbury, the General Foods as it was then, the Alcan as it was then, in Oxford, Morris Motors, and then it became British Leyland, which was, history will judge better than I can. So the car industries were the major ones, press steel fisher, body makers.
And people lived this far out?
Yeah, yeah.
And how did they travel into work at that time?
Well, they travelled in either with company buses, which used to collect them from various fixed points. Those who were decreasingly in agriculture traditionally lived on or around the farm. But I know the population of Deddington, in one of the reports, I believe it was in the middle of the 19th century, was 40% farm, and now I think there wouldn't be 40 people employed in farming.
No.
Because it's so mechanised and so different, as is general practice. It's an evolution, and it's something that one can sit and wonder at from the side and gaze at the future and often get it wrong.
So it's never going to be perfect. We've always got something to learn, and everything has...
I think
sometimes unexpected outcomes as well.
It was the great physician Osler who said that the day he stopped learning was the day after they buried him.
Yes, that's food for thought.
Yes, certainly was.
But tell me, how did the practice, that it was 300 square miles and all these villages, and how did that evolve during the time you were...
When we arrived, it quickly became clear that the changes in practice were such that we needed one centre. And we opened the health centre, which was built for and paid for by the government. We bought it when a different government came to power, because I didn't want to be at the behest of a committee of laymen.
Yeah, but you say we. How many of you were there at that stage?
Three partners.
Okay.
We bought the place from the government, on a mortgage, like everybody else. And by this time, the population had slightly increased. So we started, when I came here, there were 6,000 patients and probably 7.5 by the late 80s. It's more now because of the closure of the base at Hayford and more people around there. New developments, as you can see in Deddington.
Yes.
I'm sitting in one of the new developments as we talk.
Yes.
Council estate, the social housing, was built along the Hampton Road after the war. When it was a row of cottages beforehand. The Windmill Centre was funded and built on the site of the old Windmill School, which is the secondary school for Deddington.
Right.
And it's now become, that's another story for another day. But the cricket pitch, the tennis courts, the windmill itself, are all created by some of the energies of some extraordinary people, which this place seems to grow.
Yes.
Whether it's the manure or whatever.
Perhaps it's that. Perhaps it's the fresh air.
It's the fresh air. But
Or perhaps it's the pubs.
Perhaps. But there you see, they've all changed beyond recognition.
Okay.
All beyond recognition.
Can you give me a potted history of the pubs?
A potted history of the pubs. Well, the one I met...
Evolution or revolution?
The one I met first was the Unicorn, when I first came up here in the... long before I joined the practice, but I knew people up here in this part of the world. And that was when, in the late 60s, when there wasn't a cricket pitch There was the castle grounds, which was which had a wooden pavilion. So we played a cricket match there once, and then it rained, so we spent the rest of the day in the pub. This was traditional, apparently.
That was an option, yes.
Yeah. The Deddington Arms was the King's Arms, and the Red Lion was something else. I really didn't... the only one I knew was the Unicorn to start with. And then we lived in South Newington when we first came here, so I didn't really see much of the local village until we moved here in, I believe it was 1986.
Yes.
So I'd already been 14 years in the area with a practice based in Deddington, but not living here.
Mm.
So it was quite a joy to get here
And
move with my family
too.
And my four kids.
Yes. And did that move coincide with more emphasis in your medical practice on expansion? And
I don't think it was any part of it. I think it was just the opportunity of buying a different house.
Yeah.
And really cutting down on mileage.
Yes.
Because the kids were at school locally, Bloxham for the boys and Oxford for the girls, and there was a school bus. So between my wife and I, we saved by moving to Deddington.
Yes.
It's a completely unimportant, but to everybody else. But we saved 100 miles a day.
Yeah, that's
between us.
Quite significant, isn't it?
And it meant that every daytime, nighttime, on call journey was from the centre of the practice, as opposed from one edge to the other.
Yeah.
So it did practically make a huge difference.
It made sounds like it gave your children more independence also.
Well, they were the sort of age where I was praying they would become independent, yes. They were.
Are you still praying that?
No, they're lovely, but and they were. But, you know, teenagers need to be teenagers, and there was no way we could permanently sit in a car picking them up from around the county.
So when you moved to Deddington, as you say, you're the centre of a hub of your practice.
Exactly.
Yes.
It had the library working well. It had the shops. There were more shops then. We had several butcher shops in the old days, but I think at one stage we had four hairdressers now.
You had to choose which to patronise.
Well, of course, I suppose the barber and the butcher had a lot in common, but they're not. But anyway, it's as we all know, this place is very well served and it remains a hub. And I think the three villages of Hempton, of Clifton and of Deddington together are one of the nicest places in the world to live.
Absolutely.
With some extraordinary people, both from the ancient families of all kinds.
You say ancient, what do you mean?
I mean going back a couple of hundred years, able to trace their ancestry.
Stable.
They're that stable.
Yeah.
We had a very interesting statistic. Everybody said, it's just the old people who are left in Deddington. When we did our computerisation of all our records, the histogram of the population measured exactly the national average. We had the same number of elderly, we had the same number of newborn, we had the same number, apart from between 18 and 26. And that tranche was reflected by the fact that youngsters were going away to university or to their first jobs and moving back into the area later. It's absolutely stable.
That is amazing. And do you think that would be true today as well?
I don't know, but we've got a fantastic group of young parents and outstanding youngsters, most of whom, if they're 10 and over, I have seen in the practice.
Mm.
And I think they're a wonderful lot.
Because you've seen them grow up. You were there when they were born.
Yeah. Well,
you
it's
must
part
feel
of the,
affinity with them.
Part of the GP's job is to hold the hands of the dying and to be the first to grasp the newborn.
Yeah.
And as a philosophy, it's not just romantic. It's absolutely true. And if one can look through that and into the things that make a doctor tick, I think that's part of it. It's also nice to have a pension, you know.
Yes.
But it was grand. And coming to live in Deddington, and now in my retirement over the last 9 or 10 years, it's been a matter of great joy to see these young families grow those 8 or 10 years older. And also now getting involved with other things in you know, the latter part of my life, like the festival. Other friends are running the tennis club or helping with it. Other friends are helping with the cricket club. Lots of charity work goes on. The festival doesn't, well, hopefully will one day make some money, and it's going to be committed towards the production of a proper building for the preschool, which is a village effort, and I think it is a very worthy effort.
Indeed, yes.
To which people could leave or give or donate money to, because there's never going to be enough.
Do you have a site in mind?
I think it's on the present site. That's the idea, but it's with the OCC, and I hope once the Olympics are over, the lottery fund, and there must be educational grants available towards what will be a very expensive building, but it will be owned by the village, of the village, for the village.
And again,
and
of
the
course,
younger, and it's the investment
in the youth,
in the youth,
bringing them into the village, because it's sad when you see a village die off through old age.
Yeah, well, I don't think this one will die off. It's very alive and very kicking. Mm. And my children constantly talk. My boys are over 40,
yes,
and my girls are under 40, but they talk most lovingly of their childhood and this extraordinary place.
What are the sort of things that they remember?
They remember people stopping them and asking how they were, instead of the other way around with their father.
But did they feel they had to always be on their best behaviour because they were yours?
No, my children were never well behaved.
Right.
Well, they were, I suppose. They're always polite and charming, but they were, I think, four of the wildest kids ever. But none of that anymore.
No. What a relief! You
well,
did
they've got
something
their own.
Right.
They've got their own.
Okay.
So that cures all that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But when you look back on the whole, your life in Deddington, what would you say were your hopes for it, for the future?
I hope it continues to evolve as a balanced. There's no great dominance of a major house, if I can put it that way. We're not dominated by the manor house. There is a manor house, but I mean, we all know that. But it's not dominant. It's a very egalitarian place. Most of the time, the councils and the advice given to the village or being asked of the village are by some sane and sensible people, and everybody seems to work together for a general purpose. And it's the most remarkable place.
Mm.
It's not split.
No.
It's not split by money or an acquisitiveness.
Mm.
There's a great deal of goodwill here.
And it's interesting for me as a relative newcomer to see how the church doesn't guard its boundaries. It allows
Well, I have nothing but to praise for the church, and I'm not religious myself, but the agora, the field, the place for the village has become the church. And as you well know, once a month there's the farmer's market inside the church. There are endless concerts and musical things going on with the blessing and agreement of the church. By no means are they church things.
No.
And they're made welcome. And I think it's terrific. And this is part of where the festival kicks in.
Yes, let's talk about the festival.
Well, years ago I was asked, Hugh White, who was then recently appointed, had was in his first few years as the parish priest, said he was putting on a concert and would I like to be involved, and I said I'll do whatever I can to help. Went away for a week's holiday with Viv, my wife, and came back to find I had 50 letters to sign.
Somebody had waved a magic wand in your absence.
Yes, saying Hugh O'Donnell, chairman of the Deddington Festival. I've never quite forgiven Hugh for it. But we're the best of friends.
You'd rather have had a pumpkin, really.
But no, it's turned from, that was 2001 or two. It's turned from that, and we're now in its 10th year.
My goodness.
And it's amazing it's still there, really. But we, you know, I've been there far too long, but that's the way it is. And it's really, it's a it's a festival. It's not a music festival. It's not an arts festival. It's both.
Yes.
And we have a group of those of whom we need many, many, many more, who for a tenner a year you can become a friend of the Dedington Festival, and actually that money is critical.
Okay.
What
do you spend it on?
We spend it on the rental of musical scores. We spend it on the production costs of putting on the Dedington Rocks, which is the festival, the music festival on the Friday night, which is the 15th of June this year. We spend it on just running.
Yes,
it's not a lot of money.
No,
it's a few thousand pounds here and a few thousand there.
Investing it to make a profit.
We actually last year didn't make a profit, but we had enough left over from the year before to give us some seed cord money. For this year. But it's by no means easy. But you know, in the absence of any, we used to get grants from the Arts Council. We used to get a grant from the Oxford County Council. We used to get a grant from Charwell. All these in the economic times in which we live have disappeared. So the first concert, which was Benjamin Britten's Noise Flood, which is a superb piece of music and involving all the children, well, that was a one-off because the parents found it very difficult for the kids to keep coming to rehearsals. So that rather has evolved, and we have a combination now of possibly a small orchestral piece plus a large choral piece for the classical concert. And I think this year we're doing Gilbert and Sullivan. Wendy Burrows does a wonderful show each year, which is a community show, and she really should be a football manager. She's absolutely brilliant. She's wonderful. And Wendy is... it's a come and sing thing, really, and it's always banged out, and she makes us all laugh, and it's a terrific occasion. So that's one of them. Then we have a long-standing love affair with the Steckpanner, who are the Steve Kershaw, who I believe, has already been on.
He's already been through.
And
this,
Steve's
yes.
the grand fella, and hugely, apart from being a hugely competent academic into the classics, he is also a wonderful organizer of jazz, and his Anglo-Scandinavian group will play on the Sunday.
Which Sunday is
that? That will be the 17th of June.
Mm-hmm.
And all during that weekend, we'll have the gardens open in the village, which is another very popular thing. People go to great effort. We can't ask them every year because it's too much to ask. But every other year, including, if you're lucky, a very inexpensive glass of Pimm's at the allotments.
That's an incentive. Care
of the allotment committee, who are outstanding.
Yes.
We have John Cheney's Poetry Please, which is a come and say or come and listen, and listen to some of John's own doggerel, which is wonderfully funny. George Fenimore runs a farm walk down in Clifton. He's a highly informed farmer. He writes for a lot of the county magazines, and he's very good value. Then there's a writers' competition. Could you believe 2 years ago we had 400 and something applications from children?
Have we got that many children in
no,
the village?
No, this is it not just... in the village, this is nationally. I think we had one from Falkirk, for God's sake, one from Cornwall. It's Hugh Marshall, Donald Lane, and others run this, and it's another outstanding part of it. We're also going to get, not as part of the festival, but we're hoping for the advertising will be helpful. To make sure the cricket club ball, which is on Saturday the 16th of June,
yes,
which is on the windmill site in a tent, again to raise funds for one of the local charities and, of course, for the cricket club. And the preschool dance, which the parents and the committee of the nursery school did last year, which was a howling success, which is on the 7th of July. So underneath this umbrella It's an opportunity in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
A, to brand it.
Yes. Yes.
As the festival, our festival for these villages. The charity, when it was formed, and the conditions are to increase the knowledge and friendship among the villages of Clifton, Hempton and Dennington.
And
we are charged to make everybody happier.
And do we?
Well, I hope we try, anyway.
Yes.
And, you know, with things like the farmers' market, and there's an awful lot going on here. And it's only possible because it's egalitarian. It's lovely. And everybody understands that. And you don't really need to explain it to most people, because they know and love the village for that very reason,
yes.
which has been splendid.
So all those things are happening this June. And is there anything because of the Queen's Jubilee?
Yes, Wendy Burroughs is doing a street party, I believe, on the 2nd of June, the day of her accession. Or was it the coronation? Anyway, it's on the 2nd of June.
Yes.
I thought it was the 2nd of February she came to the throne. I might be wrong.
But she has an official birthday.
But the official birthday must be then. Anyway, it's the 2nd of June, and I believe there are going to be trestle tables laid out, and no doubt very few French costumes, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
There won't be any Napoleonics around.
No.
But it should be lovely. It'll be a good giggle anyway.
So we're looking forward to a crazy summer with all these things
hopefully,
going on.
Hopefully,
and Jubilee as well.
Yes.
And you will be at the helm, sort of.
Well, no, I'm just. You see, I've been told by people who actually can run businesses that the job of a chairman is to sit down and say very little, but something that you must be prepared to have the bricks thrown at you, and leave it to those who are good at it to organise things. I'm not sure whether that's tongue in cheek or what, but the committee I've got are fabulous, and they do an enormous amount of work.
Mm.
Everybody thinks it happens by accident. Well, it doesn't.
It's a whole year
of
work,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the cost of putting on the rock concert with its highly equipped stage, which is the back half of a long articulated lorry, and which folds out into a stage in the middle of the market square, the cost and management, and I appeal to anybody who'd like to help. That'll be on the Friday the 16th, that strong arms are needed to lift crowd barriers so that we can crowd off part of
them. And what time of day would you need people?
Oh, first thing.
First thing on...
Find me, ring me, telephone
me,
whatever, and or Mike O'Brien, or John Parkinson, or half a dozen others. Everybody knows what it's about, but we need a big team.
Yes, of course.
Because it's a 14-hour day from start to finish.
Can we just repeat the date for everybody?
That is the rock concerts on the 15th
of
June.
So that day will be busy.
The morning will be busy. The rock concert starts about 4 p.m. with a disco, in quotes, for the children.
Right.
Followed
warm
by
things up.
Followed by three bands, local bands, and the Blue Meanies are one of those, followed by a tribute band, which this year we thought appropriate should be Queen. So that'll be fun.
That's appropriate.
Yeah. And then in the afternoon on Sunday the 17th, we have church teas, which coincide with the open gardens, and a guitar recital from Joe, which is lovely. He's a classical guitarist and an academic teacher of the guitar, who will be playing in the church probably most of the afternoon. So there we are. That's about the size of that.
That is brilliant.
Yeah.
Look forward to that.
And it's something, and it's another focus, it's another piece of the, I suppose, the pendulum of life in this village.
Yes.
And it seems to be gathering its own momentum.
Yes.
I mean, the original concerts cost an awful lot of money, because paying for even an amateur orchestra, you still had to have professional soloists and professional lead musicians. It was into many, many thousands.
Yeah.
And you never make the money from tickets.
Yeah. But then, of course, you get a quality product as well.
That's the idea. That's the idea.
And people learn as
well. Yeah, and people learn. And they've come to love it. The audiences are different.
Mm.
But I think it's going to be Gilbert and Sullivan this year as the choral thing, which most people seem to enjoy. Last year we had Carl Jenkins' The Armed Man, which was superb. And all the choirs in the area come and join in. And it's great.
So earlier you were hinting that perhaps you didn't quite understand how it's managed to last for 10 years, but the way you're speaking, it sounds like a fixture in the Deddington calendar.
Please God, it's got its own momentum.
Yes.
And enough people, instead of saying, oh, I didn't know that was on, are saying, when is this happening? And it's a sea change. It's a sea change. It's quite a difference.
That it's become part of an accepted, this is Deddington, this is what we do.
What is happening in this year's festival?
Exactly.
Not, I didn't know it was on.
That is success.
It's certainly, we hope it'll establish. And the new generation coming through are so good. I'm sure that they're going to pick it up and run with it. Mm. There's a lot of good things that you can't define. The youngsters with the mini rugby, the cricket with its new nets, it's the essence of the next generation, which I love about this place.
There's an energy which is moving it forward.
And if we're, the old phrase, if we're spared, let's hope it continues for a long time ahead.
I hope so too, Hugh. Thank you so much for talking to me and for sharing all your experiences and memories of life in Deddington.
Yes, thank you.
This is Hilary Smith, and you've been listening to Deddington Discussions on Deddington On Air. Tune in again to my next discussion for another perspective of life in our village. Until then, goodbye, and thank you for listening.